United States v. Higdon. Mr. Patmore.
Good morning. May it please the Court. This Court has held on numerous occasions post-Booker that the Supreme Court's decision in that matter does not allow courts to find that the guidelines themselves are unreasonable as the sole reason for sentencing a defendant outside of the applicable guidelines range. The Court decided that in Wachowniak, McIlwraith, and most recently last month in U.S. v. Perez and in April in U.S. v. Omole. To the extent that the Court's explicit statement in its sentencing reasons that the Court found the guidelines range did not sufficiently punish the defendant in view of the amount of loss inflicted is not enough to show that that was the reason for the Court sentencing outside the range. The Court's statements during sentencing do not show that it gave a studied consideration of the Section 3553 factors as a reason for a departure from the guidelines. There's absolutely nothing remarkable about Mr. Higdon or his crime. He was young. He was stupid. He drove a taxi cab for his mother's taxi cab business and transporting Medicaid patients before, at the age of 25, she decided that he should be in charge of the entire business. He accidentally submitted erroneous claims.
He what? He accidentally?
Well, he submitted
$300,000 is accidentally.
No, the way that it started, Your Honor, is he submitted a claim and it got bounced back and it got paid double. So he saw it as a way to continue and hopefully keep the business alive.
He had something good going, and he kept it up.
Exactly. He kept it up after he found that the claims were accidentally paid, saw it as a way to keep the business afloat. Certainly don't want to minimize his conduct. He did plead guilty to the crime after he was caught. He has no assets. He was not enriched by the crime. Like I said, it was simply a matter of trying to keep a business afloat. And he never should have been put in that position by his family.
He was a victim?
Excuse me? A victim now?
No, I'm not saying he's a victim,
Your Honor. That's a good one.
He's certainly not a victim. But it's just to show there is nothing remarkable about him. He was young, he was stupid, and he made some bad decisions. The court went through the guidelines computation as required. It even went so far as to require the government's iteration of a 3E1.1B motion, and it granted that motion to reduce the applicable guidelines range.
Is the guidelines specifically for Medicaid fraud, or is it fraud generally?
Generally, Your Honor.
It doesn't mention Medicaid fraud, or doesn't?
No, it's not. It's the general.
No special provision in the guidelines about Medicaid fraud?
No, Your Honor.
That's fraud, yeah.
No, it did go through the guidelines range. Of course, there are numerous adjustments that could be made. The government did make a motion for the assistance provided by Higdon in pleading guilty. The court then went so far as to grant that motion to reduce the applicable guideline range to the range which was agreed to in the plea agreement. After doing so, the court then basically disregarded the guidelines. It did give cursory review of all of the factors required in Section 3553. The government argues that there were three factors that do justify the sentence and justify the court's departure. The first stated by the government is the complexity of the offense, but this disregards the fact that under the guidelines an adjustment should have been made if there were more than sophisticated means in committing this crime, if it was so unduly complex that it warranted a more stringent sentence than pronounced in the guidelines, then both the government, the defendant, and the court all miscalculated the guidelines range. It's kind of a catch-22. If the court's going to use that as a reason to depart from the guidelines, it should have been calculated into the guidelines in the first place. But no 2B1.1 adjustment was made in that guidelines range, so basically everybody screwed up at the onset in making the guidelines computation. The government also suggests the court's consideration of the victim of the crime warranted a more stringent sentence. Again, not to minimize the fact that it was the government. The government and the court both pointed to the elderly and poor being the victims of this crime. While they are certainly the beneficiaries of the Medicaid system, they were not the victims of this crime. Restitution was ordered to the state of Indiana and to the United States government to the tune of $300,000, not to any elderly or poor victims of this crime. and there was no showing, no evidence, no factual basis that any elderly or poor people were deprived of any services due to Mr. Higdon's conduct. In fact, the elderly and poor would have been deprived of the legitimate services that Higdon was providing earlier if he had been caught earlier. So the victim certainly was not a reason to adjust the sentence upward to such an extent. Finally, the only other real reason given by the court or by the government that warranted the sentence was that the court stated that the Bureau of Prisons programs could benefit Higdon through a lengthy incarceration. With all due respect to the Bureau of Prisons, I'm not sure the vocational programs offered by the institution would outweigh the possible vocational training he could get in the commercial world. And also, obviously, being incarcerated for 5 years during one's prime earning capacity is
but
not
he's
great
getting enough. Three free meals a day and housing, too.
And he's going to lose his prime 5 years of his prime earning capacity, which will help him pay.
What's his anticipated parole date?
5 years, 60 months.
No parole, right?
Yeah, no parole.
No parole?
No, so he'll be in the Bureau of Prisons for 5 years from age 28 to 33, and then he has to pay $300,000 back to the United States government and Indiana state government. So with all due respect, I don't believe, in fact, this court in Amole just recently found that the rehabilitative potential, which the court did find that Mr. Higdon had a rehabilitative potential, that the rehabilitative potential of a defendant is a persuasive reason to allow a significant downward departure. And yet the government in this case is arguing that that warrants a threefold above the guidelines sentence of Mr. Higdon. Simply put, there's a dearth of information in the record. I, Mr. Higdon, his family, and I'm sure Mr. Ong was stunned by the fact that the court came out with a 60-month sentence.
Well, didn't the court also give him a three-level deduction for the entering his guilty plea?
It was a two-level deduction, which was in the plea agreement, and it basically makes the whole guidelines computation akin to something out of Alice in Wonderland. The court prompted Mr. Ong to make his motion for assisting in pleading guilty, granted the motion in order to reduce the guidelines computation, but then simply disregarded the guidelines. So it certainly does call into question whether this court, the Supreme Court, someone needs to give some more guidance. As this court recently founded or stated, the bounds of determining substantive due process in a post-Booker world, it's still receiving its margins on what this court is supposed to review. You know, some cases I think the court's going to have to look at it from a you know it when you see it, and three times the guidelines in a case with a totally unremarkable defendant is shocking. It was shocking to me. It was shocking to the family. I think it shocked the United States because they didn't.
What was his educational level?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
His educational level?
High school. I think he had some vocational.
Some associate degree from Ivy Tech, I think.
Yes, Your Honor. He did have a vocational degree of some type. But he basically had no experience, no education. And like I said, he was put in a position where he really should never have been. And he made some really, really stupid mistakes. As I said, it's basically a situation where, you know, it's a due process, both procedurally, Mr. Higdon needs to know, and the public needs to know, the reasons why this sentence was imposed of this severity. It must be something more than merely a philosophical disagreement with the guidelines, or somebody needs to scrap the United States Sentencing Commission, because there's no need for them if the court can make the guidelines computation and then simply disregard it and impose any sentence it so desires.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Patmore.
Thank you.
Mr. Ong?
Thank you, Your Honors. Winfield Long for the United States. The government would reject it.
The government seems to have changed its view as this case came up to the court.
That's true, Your Honor.
What happened to make you change your view? Was it the cogency of Judge Young's analysis?
I think Judge Young's analysis was fair, and I think it supported what the government...
I cannot agree with you. he seems to have been confused on a number of levels. For one thing, he seems to have thought that this crime would harm Medicaid recipients. That, of course, is not true. It wouldn't harm them at all. That's his first mistake. Second, this business about spending 5 years in prison in order to improve his vocational skills and his health and so on. According to the pre-sentence report, he has no health problems. He has vocational skills. He's a manual worker. You know, he's got the skills. He works. He works consistently. He doesn't have an employment problem. So how on earth is he going to benefit from 5 years in prison? And furthermore, his ability to make the restitution that was ordered, which is, you know, scanty at best, obviously going to be impaired by his being imprisoned. So, and then also, Judge Young talks about avoiding unwarranted sentence disparities, but he doesn't. He says defendants with similar conduct, similar records have been found guilty of similar conduct. There's nothing in here about other sentences, other people with these. I think it's incoherent.
But I would respectfully disagree, Judge, that it's incoherent.
Well, take it one by one. Are there Medicaid victims to this crime?
I think there are, Judge.
Oh, please.
Well, no question, it's extremely indirect. But I think
his focus was
the taxpayers.
Your entitlement is not affected by whether there's a crime. Whatever you think, where's the evidence that Judge Young realizes this? He describes them as the victims. He doesn't explain.
He said this was an attack on the poor, the elderly, and the taxpayers. And I think that's what the Medicaid program is about.
If you steal from the federal government, you're stealing from the richest entity in the world, right?
Well, Your Honor, the Medicaid program, the reality is the Medicaid program, I think, you know, how much detail does he need to go into,
to describe? You certainly didn't think that when you were negotiating a plea agreement. And what about this business 5 years in the prison so you can hone your vocational skills and have your health problems, which you don't have? What's that about? So irresponsible.
I think that was clearly secondary to Judge Young's.
I don't care whether it's secondary or tertiary. Look, the Supreme Court, although it, you know, emphasized the importance of the district judge's discretion, it does say the farther you get from the guidelines, the more justification you need. And here he goes way, way outside the guidelines, and he offers these really goofy reasons. I mean, you're trying to rehabilitate them, but you don't find them in the actual transcript. It's kind of this stream of consciousness business and speculations about, you know, and just tell me, where does this unwarranted sentence disparity come from?
I think he was clear in the interview, the record as a whole, Your Honor, that he was talking about his own sentencing disparities.
Yes, and now where is that? Where is the record that? You haven't told us anything about how Judge Young sentences. Do you know?
No, I have an idea. The Judge Young is extremely stern when it comes to white-collar sentences, and I think that's what he was alluding to, is that that is his philosophical view. I think it's pretty clear when you take the record as a whole, that's his philosophical view. And I think he was saying, for me to be consistent in my court, This is the sentence that's necessary for you.
Well, shouldn't you, in defending him, look at his actual sentences and see whether he is being consistent? We don't have any idea.
Well, that is true, Your Honor. I did not do that, and perhaps that's the government's mistake. I think the record taken as a whole is not cursory or superficial. I think he does go through the factors in a meaningful way. It may be terse. It may be...
I don't understand you. How can this five-year sentence be defended on the ground that it's going to improve his vocational skills?
I would agree that's a stretch.
That was ridiculous. And the sentencing disparities are unsubstantiated, and he seems confused about who actually loses if there's a Medicaid theft. The complexity, as Mr. Patmore mentioned, that's something that should have gone into the guideline computation. So what's left exactly of Judge Young's thoughtful consideration of this?
I guess I respectfully disagree with the court that I do think that his emphasis on the Medicaid program and how far he has to go in relying on
look how strange that is. We have in the guidelines the vulnerable victim enhancement, right?
She's sitting right there.
And the vulnerable victim is, you know, if you actually go and rob a poor person, you know, that's a terrible thing to do. You know, blackmailing homosexuals. No, you have all sorts of vulnerable victims. Who ever thought that the federal government was a vulnerable victim?
Well, I think this particular program, Judge Young did feel, was
but it's not as if the program has some fixed amount of money to give to the poor, and if there's a theft, they say, oh, very sorry, your entitlement has now been cut. Right? That's not how Medicaid works.
Well, it doesn't work that way in the short run, certainly. No question. But in the long run, I mean, you can pick up a newspaper, you know, virtually any week and see that the whole public is grappling with how to fund Medicaid, the programs for our least able to take care of themselves, the poor and the elderly. And it is a huge public policy issue, debate, chore, and I think Judge Young's recognition of that in this sentence, that's really what was at the heart of it.
Mr. Young, do you believe that it was the $300,000 as opposed to, let's say, $30,000 that drove the judge to the enormity of the sentence?
Yeah, I think the amount of money, in particular for this particular judge, was significant. I don't think he felt, he says, I don't think he feels that the guidelines, he makes that pretty clear, are completely adequate when it comes to amounts of loss. And I think he abides by, and I think I strongly suggest in a meaningful way the requirements that he is supposed to abide by in considering the guidelines. Again, I argue it is not cursory, it is not superficial. As I said, it may not be the most philosophical explanation. It may be somewhat terse, but he was quite clear as he goes through factor by factor that he was put off dramatically by the amount of the loss, by the nature of the victim. That is the Medicaid program and its intended beneficiaries and how
but
it's funded.
Did he actually express a disagreement with the philosophy of the guidelines?
I can't say that he does overtly.
Because that apparently the Supreme Court permits. That's Kimbrough. So if he says, you know, I think white-collar criminals are treated too leniently by the guidelines, that's apparently his prerogative. But I didn't see that either.
I think it's pretty clear by inference that that's in there. I don't know that he says that directly, but I do think that is Judge Young's. And I do think when it came
better
to
if he gave a more coherent explanation. I mean, we're getting back to where we were, you know, 20 years ago before the guidelines, where judges just, you know, talked off the top of their head. They referred to newspaper articles they'd read that morning and so on. I didn't think the Supreme Court wanted us to restore that system in its entirety.
Now, it is a challenging set of facts in that respect, I'd agree. It was obviously way outside the guidelines. But I do think Judge Young touched all the bases he was supposed to touch. He emphasized seriousness of the offense, respect of law.
Counsel, what was recommended in the pre-sentence report?
I think it was 18 to 24 months. And as this court emphasized in Goldberg, the overriding considerations in the guidelines are desert and just punishment. That really was what drove Judge Young, without question, in the sentence that he imposed. Was it an extremely stern sentence? Yes, it was. But he's quite clear that he believes, for purposes of deterrence and punishment, in white-collar cases, these kind of stern sentences are necessary.
How does he sentence in drug cases?
Well, that's an interesting question, Your Honor. I'll tell you, I don't practice in Evansville that much anymore. We have an office there, but my experience is he has some concerns about the disparity between drug sentences and white-collar sentences, and I think he's been pretty clear about that in his colloquies and other sentences. And I think he's consistent then in that respect.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Ong. Mr. Patmore, how much time does he have? 1 minute? Yeah.
Mr. Ong stated that the judge was shocked by the amount of the loss. As I pointed out in my brief, the amount of loss the government would have had to sustain in order to warrant the sentence imposed by the district court against Mr. Higdon is $22 million in loss to the government. Certainly, it's a philosophical difference in the guidelines. He does not believe that white-collar criminals are treated sternly enough, but the court still must look to the individualized characteristics of the defendant under 3553 and the crime itself. There was nothing in this crime, nothing in the defendant to warrant such a substantial departure. As you pointed out, if you depart greatly, a greater explanation is required. That's a procedural due process requirement. Mr. Higdon is entitled to know the reasons why he was treated so sternly, and both he, I, and I think everyone in the courtroom except for Judge Young still remain puzzled as to why he received a sentence three times the recommended sentence of the guidelines.
Counsel, I assume at the time of your pre-sentence agreement that you understood at that time that it was an 18 to 24-month sentence?
Yes, Your Honor.
The defendant assumed that, I assume?
Everyone assumed that. It was in the pre-sentence report, and it was agreed upon.
Including the
government. Excuse me?
Including the government.
Including the government. We entered into a plea agreement on that basis, and it simply means that...
Did the judge make any comment on that?
No, Your Honor. He agreed with it. As I said, he even required and granted the government's 3E motion to reduce the guidelines computation.
Right. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. And you were appointed, were you not, Mr. Patmore?
Yes, Your Honor.
So we thank you for your excellent efforts on behalf of your client. We thank Mr. Ong also.